Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Freaking first cut. Golly.
Welcome to the First Cut Podcast. I'm Rick Gaiman, and this is your round one recap for the Sony Open. And joining me to break it all down, no, it's not Tom Watson. It is one Kyle Porter. KP, what's up, big guy? I love the look you have here.
Yeah, the earbuds. It's actually, I'm sure producer Jacob is just, he took like 18 screenshots just now, but it's actually more comfortable than it looks. It's not a good look.
Well, it doesn't look comfortable at all. So I imagine any level of comfort would be better than it looks.
Would you, here's a good, would you rather, wear earbuds like this all the time or play golf exclusively in shirts that Rory Sabatini has worn?
Okay. Can I add a third option? Would you only like to apply, you're only allowed to apply suntan lotion like Webb Simpson does on his
Oh my God. It makes it look, I love Webb. That's well documented, but the beard and sunscreen look, it like cuts off the beard. It's so weird. I don't get it
because it happens every week. Like it never, so no one has ever said anything. He's never gone to the spray lotion. He just always has the real stuff and he won't rub it in. I don't know what's going on there, but I guess it works for him.
Yeah. I mean, it does work. I mean, he's a top 10 player in the world.
There you go. I would do that to be a top 10 player in the world, I suppose. Let's talk a little golf. Round one in the books, 18 holes down, and it was Peter Malnati who, for the majority of the day, KP, was your first round leader. Guy went off in the second group on Thursday morning, held the first round leader distinction until he got caught by two guys later in the day. But let's start with Malnati here. You know, he's quietly having a really good start to this 2021 season. He had that close call at Sanderson Farms. That's an event that he's won in the past. He backed it up the next week with a top five at Shriners. And here he is again, just kind of putting it all together, having fun out there and seeing if he can, raise a trophy.
Yeah, you know, he really has to take advantage of courses like this, right? He's just so, you know, relatively short that it's, you know, we saw Kevin Kisner talk about this earlier this week, right? Where he said, I can't win at Torrey Pines. I can't win at Bethpage. That's like Malnati, but even more so, right? He's not the player that Kevin Kisner is. So yeah, I think it's a really intriguing leaderboard because Kokrak and Malnati are basically the opposite of each other in terms of, of style, in terms of everything, really, it seems like. And then you've got Neiman, obviously, who to me is kind of the class up there. And you know, I wrote this in a story for CBSSports.com. It felt like round five of the Tournament of Champions for Joaquin Neiman, right? Just the way he played following how hot he was on the weekend at Kapalua. I mean, it's kind of his tournament to lose, right?
Yeah, Justin Ray tweeted out Joaquin Neiman's last two rounds in Hawaii, so final round of Tournament of Champions, first round here at the Sony Open, 17 under par. He gained 9.5 strokes from tee to green. He made 16 birdies and one eagle. I'm no rocket scientist, KP. That's pretty good.
Yeah, it's unreal. And I mean, he was first in the field off the tee, first in the field tee to green. And so you can just, he putted pretty decently too. And then he chips in at the last. And you don't even have to do that if you're hitting it like he is. And I'm curious about this. I don't know. I'm really curious to see how this year goes. I wrote about Neiman earlier in the week about just the trajectory. We've seen a bunch of guys kind of where he's at age 22. So we've seen guys like Adam Scott, Ricky Fowler, but then you've got like Bud Cauley, and there's right. there's this inflection point when you're 22, 23, 24, where it can go either way. I don't know how Tom Watson kept these earbuds in, where it can go either way. And for him, I just, it feels like it's going up. And I mean, obviously over the last 2 weeks, but I just, even the way he played in the fall, that's sort of the way it's been moving overall. And he's really fun to watch play as well. I mean, he's in my group of, I don't know, 10 or 15 guys that it's super fun to watch them play golf.
Yeah, when he gets it going, it's electric stuff. You mentioned the chip in on 18 for eagle. So he had, let's see, 7 birdies, an eagle, and 1 bogey on the card en route to that 62. And producer Jacob, before we went live here, so accurately pointed out, this is these three guys at the top. That's the one win club. All three of these guys, Peter Malnati, Jason Kokrak, Joaquin Niemann, 1 victory on the resume, trying to cash in their second, which we have at times, especially with major championships, but at times referenced the second victory is the one that validates your career a little bit. And all three of those guys striving for it here at the Sony Open.
Yeah, they are. And they all won very different tournaments. Niemann won Greenbrier. Malnati was Sanderson, right?
Yes.
And then Kokrak was CJ Cup.
Yeah, just a couple of months ago. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and they're all at very different stages of their career, I would say. You know, Neiman's obviously young star, potential superstar. Kokrak, journeyman, who's been kind of sneaky solid in terms of like it just staying on the PGA Tour. And then Maldotti's just kind of bounced up and down between Korn Ferry and PGA over the course of his career. So there's just, it's a, you know, I don't think you could put together a more kind of eclectic trio at the top.
That group is 2 shots clear of the rest of the field, and there's basically just a logjam behind. A couple of notables, Webb Simpson is 5 under, so 3 shots off the lead. Webb had a kind of a weird day. He referenced this in his post-round interview where he said he hit a lot of fairways. He was in position a bunch off the tee. He did not hit his irons or wedges very well, and then he was kind of like bizarro Webb on the greens where he missed like, I don't know, 3 birdie putts inside like 8 or 9 feet, but he rolled like 3 birdie putts in from like 25 or 30 feet. It was just kind of weird all around, but he was pretty satisfied. He said it would have been disappointing if he finished at 3 under. He's pretty satisfied being at 5.
Yeah, I saw that. And I watched most of his, I guess, back 9, and he had a couple iron shots that were just very unlike him, like just were not even, I mean, they were fine. They were on the green or whatever, but he wasn't tight with his irons. And, you know, it's gotta be disappointing for somebody like him who you go to the Sony and what's the only thing you don't do well? The only thing you don't do well is hit it far. So that is mitigated here. You're the best in the world after the drive. We've talked about that.
Yep.
And the thing that you're best in the world at, you didn't do very well on Thursday. So the good news is you still shoot 65, right? And that we might talk about Morikawa here in a second. That was how I felt a little bit about him too. Like, he's a really good driver. He lost strokes off the tee, mostly because he hit a ball out of bounds on 12.
Right.
And it's just got to be so frustrating because you're a top 10 guy in a decent field, not great. And you just, both of those guys, it didn't feel like they had their best stuff or took advantage of kind of what was in front of them.
Yeah, we can just talk about Colin Morikawa. So he had 6 birdies on the card. He didn't make a bogey, but he did make that double on 12 that you're alluding to where he hits it right. He hits it OB. And yeah, he loses a stroke off the tee. Finally gained strokes putting, 1.3 there. That's all good. It's you know, and golf's a weird game. We talk about this all the time. If they would put it all together, Morikawa or Webb or whatever would have shot a 62 or a 61 or a 60 or whatever. So it's rarely going to all come together for them. So, you know, as you look forward to the next 3 days, you assume that there are lower scores out there for Webb, for Morikawa, and, you know, you could probably throw in I was gonna throw in a third guy, but no, let's go with those 2.
I think this gets to where, like, so you and I are so into strokes gained, the numbers, all these different things, and you can't not watch, because when you watch, like, if you just looked at the numbers, you'd be like, oh, they didn't play very well, like, or they played, or you would say they played okay in certain areas, but then you watch and you're like, man, I know what these guys are capable of. They looked horrible, you know? And so it makes you like frame the numbers differently. and really, for me, be optimistic about the next 3 days for both of them, because I'm like, I don't know. It seems like it couldn't play any worse. That's not statistically true, but just watching them and knowing, you know, kind of what their past history is, I think at least one of those guys, if not both of them, is going to be in it on Sunday.
Yeah, I think that's about right. Interesting little nugget happened Wednesday evening. The PGA Tour adds an OB stakes to the left of 18T in an attempt to try to stop these guys from cutting the corner into what I guess is 10 fairway, I guess it is, or 10, cutting into 10. And I guess the there's two takeaways from this. One is the idea of trying to get guys to play the course more traditionally, or the way that it was designed, the way that it was intended to be played. That's, I think, one story. But I also think the little sub story is telling these guys Wednesday evening that there's now OB out there is kind of crazy.
It is crazy. I was listening to that on the broadcast, and I was actually thinking of like, what is the mechanism for actually making sure everybody knows that? Because
do you want me to tell you?
Did they like text them all?
Yeah, so they sent them a text at 7 p.m. They sent the text out to all the players, and then off of first and 10T, there were signs, and the starter was reminding everyone that there is now OB there. That is the mechanism.
Okay, so it's you know, you're practicing all week, and then you get there, and you're like, oh, okay. I actually like it. And, you know, we've seen this at the Open Championship before. I can't remember, was it, where was it? I think it was where Rory won, which was, I think it was Hoylake.
Okay.
Royal Liverpool, where you have the out of bounds, like that's in play. And it seems goofy and weird, but I think like the intent was actually really good for what the PGA Tour is trying to do. I was curious about this. I was thinking about this as I was watching. I really like this course. I think it's hard because it doesn't stand up to the modern game. You know, it's 7,000 yards. It just gets bullied into the ground, but it can play fast and firm. We saw that. We saw some of the approach shots that were, it was really firm, and it's got some nuance to it. You know, and I know it's a rainer, it's historically relevant, all those different things. What are your thoughts as you kind of watch the course play out?
Yeah, the two words you said, firm and fast, any course that can play that way or they will allow to play that way always gets me excited. You have to be a lot more, I don't want to say accurate, but you have to be more committed to your tee shots. You have to kind of hit it in the direction that the hole demands it, because you get the 50 yard run out, which can easily go into the primary cut of rough, which is not all that thick around here. But I think it really makes these guys think through it instead of just flying it, carrying the bunker and landing it wherever they want. It is interesting because there's really no defense outside of the weather. The wind could kick up, and that's really the defense there. It's literally the flattest course on the PGA Tour, but I do like it. It's classic. It's gettable, but I like it.
Yeah, it's sort of like what Trinity Forest was for the Byron Nelson, where it's like, okay, if it doesn't blow, then everybody's going to shoot 63, you know? And so it's hard. Like I don't love like the everybody shooting 63 thing, but I also think that, I don't know, it's just, there's more intrigue to the way the course is designed than some of the other places they go to.
I always think it's tough when a course doesn't have a signature hole or like a really iconic hole. And I guess the only thing about the signature hole at Wylie is what, 16, but it's only because the W trees are behind it. That's not part of the hole. That is literally the palm tree in a shape of a W that makes it iconic. And we've seen, I say it kind of tongue in cheek, but we have seen courses, Torrey North, essentially put together a three-hole stretch and name it so that it has like an iconic stretch or it has an iconic hole. I mean, I do think it makes a big difference in people's minds. Like, oh, they're about to enter the undertow, or they're about to enter the bear trap, or they're going to get to 16, or they're going to get to 17. I think it makes a big difference when you start talking to casual fans about some of these courses.
Yeah, that's probably true. I don't care about that stuff. Like, it doesn't do anything for me. I just want to watch. I want to watch firm and fast golf. I want to watch guys struggle to get the ball you know, and I don't know, even some of the pin setup, I was like, ah, it's kind of an easy pin. And I get it. They have to do all 4 days or whatever, but it just seems like a course that if the wind's blowing, if you set up the pins right, it could actually play pretty tough at 7,000 yards.
You alluded to Joaquin Niemann earlier, likely being the favorite to win this event, currently 8 under par, tied with Peter Malnati and Jason Kokrak at the top. And odds makers agree with you. He's 6.5 to 1. He is the favorite to win this event. And then Daniel Berger, who we didn't even talk about, is second. So he's 9 to 1. He's 2 shots back. He's 6 under. Then Webb Simpson at 10, Jason Kokrak at 12. And no love for our man Peter Malnati, all the way down at 16 to 1. Heading into the final 3 days, which, yeah, I get.
Yeah, I get too. You know, I was looking up the lack of love for Berger is, you know, going back to my power rankings from after Colonial last year, but
it's not new.
It's I was looking at guys in this field over the last year. DataGolf has, so it's Harris English, Webb, and Berger are by far the best. The three best guys in this field over the last 12 months. And we sort of talk about English and Webb like that, I think, but we just, I don't know. I feels like Berger is, I don't know if he's underrated. I think he's under talked about. But he's been, I mean, he had his last five or so tournaments in the fall were kind of so-so, but other than that, over the last 12 months, dude, he's been awesome. And he was, you know, he birdied the last on Thursday to get into that T4 position.
Yeah, he did. Now, my big thing with Berger has been, you know, a lot of people want to say, oh, he's been really good since the restart. And I like to point out that he was good before that. Like the three events before the shutdown, I think he top 10 them all. Like, I mean, he was just rolling. So this shouldn't be a surprise. We are now like a year into Daniel Berger being really good. Like, well, that's kind of my takeaway.
Yeah, I remember, I think it was the top 10 he had at Pebble. That was the first time I was like, oh, that's interesting. Yeah. But it's not just that. It's also this pedigree that he's got of having, I mean, he's won a couple times. He's been on a president. It's not like it's just popping up out of nowhere. And maybe this is just a 1 year heater. It was there's an actual arc to, oh, he got hurt. Mm-hmm. And now he's just bouncing back to being what he was. So I don't know. Maybe he's not exciting enough for people, but I'm in. I mean, he's been playing great.
I'm in too. He's 9 to 1 if you want to be in as well, thanks to our friends over at Will Hill. And I think that'll do it, KP. We'll have some more coverage after each round of the Sony Open as the drama unfolds out at Wailea. But for now, that's Kyle Porter.
Okay. Real quick, what bet that you made beforehand are you most excited about?
I guess it has to be, I have a Webb outright, which I still think is pretty good.
I love that.
I have Peter Malnati in my DraftKings core, but it's Thursday. There's only one direction for him to go.
Yeah.
So if he finished T7, I'd be thrilled with that.
I'm excited about Harris English miscut right now.
Oh, he's even par, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The afternoon wave is like a stroke better than the morning wave. So keep that in mind. Yeah. So not a full stroke. So those guys in the afternoon got it really good. They might, some of those early guys might have got screwed, but we shall see.
We shall.
You can follow Kyle at Kyle Porter CBS. You can follow me at Rick Run Good. This has been The First Cut, and we'll catch you next time.
Jeremy Renner returns to Paramount Plus for a brand new season of the original hit series, Mayor of Kingstown.
My job is to create a balance, avoid a war.
From executive producer Taylor Sheridan, co-creator of Yellowstone.
There's some new players in town, and they brought the flag.
And Antoine Fuqua, director of Training Day.
I know it's always been a war zone, Mike, but this is next level.
The mayor is back in business.
Are you warning me?
You're going to find out.
Mayor of Kingstown, new season streaming June 2nd, exclusively on Paramount Plus.